I'm Sergeant Eric Edwards with the Phoenix Police Department Legal Unit. I've been on for approximately 11 years. I started out as a patrol officer in Maryville, worked there for about 3 years. After working Maryville, I worked walking beat out there, also worked on as an FTO at Maryville. Then I went to detectives and worked both a night squad out of SRB and as a rope detective, which is repeat offender program for the high rate recidivist criminal. After that, for the last approximately 3.5 years of my career, I've been assigned to the legal unit when I went through law school. And now I am the department's legal advisor and legislative liaison, which is basically the lobbyist trying to get laws passed for the department that are good for us and to keep laws from being passed that are negative for us. The subject we're here to talk about today is civil liability, and civil liability as it relates to block watchers on patrol, people, citizens of Phoenix who participate in block watchers on patrol program. I put the general ideas I want to talk about as far as liability. There's two major areas: the criminal side and the civil side as far as liability. And generally, we talk, as far as liability, people think about civil side, getting sued, and what's going to happen to me, what do I do that will get me sued. But it's very important also that we talk about criminal liability, because the acts that people do while they're participating in the Block Watchers on Patrol program can subject them to criminal liability as well. Give you a general overview as far as the criminal and the civil system. What's the punishment on the criminal side? Jail, imprisonment. The criminal side, obviously jail. There are fines. There's things like probation, those types of things. On the civil side, it's different. Everyone knows on the civil side, when we talk about lawsuits, usually we're talking about money. And the money in the civil side is designed to make the person whole. They've been injured in some form, and since we can't, you know, make their arm as good as new, we give them money to try to compensate them for it. There is, however, another part of the civil system as far as punishment or how things are handled that most people aren't aware of, and it is an issue that's good sometimes because it's something that neighborhoods can do to try to alleviate some of the problems they face, and that's called an injunction. If you have a problem, someone playing their music too loud and it goes on for a long period of time, you can get an injunction prohibiting harassment, and that is a civil court order from the judge to a person to stop or to cease and desist an activity. So that's another part of the civil system you should be aware of, and it's a good tool for problems you may see in your neighborhood. As far as the victims, on the criminal side, there's actually always one victim, and sometimes it is not there's never a person who's a victim. The number one victim on any crime is the state of Arizona. If you have a crime such as a possessory crime, possession of drugs or something like that, the only victim is the state. Now, if it is crime against a person or against property, you also usually have a second victim who is a person who was injured or whose property was injured. But the number one victim is always the state of Arizona. On the civil side, the victim, or what we call in civil terms the plaintiff, is the person who was injured, the person who was wrong. Let's talk about what I have listed here on the criminal side. These are the major types of criminal liability that a participant in this program will face. The first one is assault. And if you notice, when I talk about the civil side, I've got assault and battery. On the criminal side, all we deal with is assault, because under Title 13, the Arizona criminal law, assault and battery have been combined into one crime. We used to have a crime of battery. On the civil side, the distinction still exists. An assault is placing someone in apprehension of immediate harm. That's like when I say, I'm going to clean your clock, and I make a fist. And I don't hit someone yet, but I just place them in apprehension. That's an assault. Battery is the actual touching. Okay, when I make a fist and I hit them, I've now committed a battery. Well, on the criminal side, we have ARS 13-1203 that deals with both the apprehension of physical injury and the actual hitting. Okay, it covers both of them under what we call assault under Arizona criminal law. The reason I say that you may face liability as a block watcher under the idea of an assault, you're out on patrol and you break our cardinal rule. For some reason, you decide you are going to get involved, which is the number one rule. We do not want you getting personally involved in these situations. But if you would decide to break that rule and you go out and you lay your hands on a person, or you just, you know, look like you're going to grab them, there is clearly a potential that you may assault them criminally. And the issue, the number one issue, is going to be whether you did it with a justification. Either self-defense or a lawful justification to allow you, let's say you're trying to make a citizen's arrest, which again, we recommend that you do not do. But if you decide to do that, if you were wrong in trying to make a citizen's arrest and you put your hand on someone, you have now committed a criminal assault under Title 13. You put your hands on someone in a physical manner where you had no lawful justification. And even like I say, just, hey, you stop running or else I'm going to grab you, could place them in the apprehension, the assault, fear of the imminent touching, that would also lead to criminal prosecution possibly here in Arizona. The second one, trespassing. We talk about this with a lot of our police officers. A police officer can trespass while on duty. So can a citizen if he's out on a patrol program. And the way I see this really coming up for you in your everyday patrol duties is you're out there and you see little Johnny, a 14-year-old kid, and you're watching Johnny and it looks like he's up to no good. He jumps over a fence into a backyard. And you want to see what he's up to. You're thinking possible burglary. So you look over and you see the shoes on Johnny's feet sliding inside of a window. You think Johnny's going inside there. He's climbing in the window to do a burglary. Well, you jump over the fence now and you look inside and you notice that Johnny's climbed into bed. Johnny lives there and he just snuck out. You know, his parents didn't want his parents to know. Well, you're now in their fence backyard, and what you have done is, without lawful justification, you have trespassed on someone's private property. So that could subject you to criminal prosecution again. That's the type of thing you need to be aware of. If you're in a location, even if no one told you to stay off, and even if there's no sign, if a reasonable person would know it's not open to the public, such as a fence backyard, you face the potential of trespassing and a possible criminal prosecution for that. The third one on the side, kidnapping. Kidnapping, we usually think of, when you hear it, you've seen enough Dragnet and, you know, some of the other TV shows and movies, you think of, you know, throwing someone in the trunk of your car, tied up, and driving across state lines. Kidnapping, as far as a crime, is not that, you know, that big an issue. Basically, all kidnapping requires is that you hold someone against their will and you move them however slight. So let's say, again, I break that number one rule. For some reason, I decide I'm going to get involved against our rules and our suggestions. And you grab onto someone and say you're under citizen's arrest. But let's say you're wrong. The person did not commit a crime. You're holding them against their will. And maybe all you do is you grab them and you say, you have a seat over here. When they sit down, you move them a very slight distance, yes. But kidnapping only requires a very slight movement. So now that you took control of them against their will and you sat them down, moving them, if it's no legal arrest, you've kidnapped that person technically under Title 13 criminal law in Arizona. You can see the assault, the trespass, and the kidnapping, three potential liability issues if you break that number one rule. That's why we set up these rules that your coordinators will go over with you. Never get involved. Besides the criminal and civil liability, obviously our number one concern, it's not worth you getting injured and the potential dangers out there that you might face. Under civil, I've got the word torts. And torts is just a fancy lawyer's term. It really isn't anything special. A tort is simply a wrong against another person. And there's two types of torts that we're going to deal with today as far as civil liability. The first one, intentional torts, and the second one is negligent. Let's talk about the intentional torts here. If you notice, they look very similar to the criminal aspects of liability. I've got assault and battery, I've got trespass, unlawful imprisonment, which is pretty much the same as kidnapping, and defamation. And one of the reasons they look so similar is they are extremely similar. You can, if you do one of the things that I mentioned that will lead to the criminal liability here for assaulting or trespassing someone, you can be arrested for that act and also sued civilly for the exact same act. So if you do one act, it can lead to both criminal and civil liability on your part if you go against these rules. The assault and battery, again, the assault is placing someone in an imminent fear of immediate physical contact. The battery is the actual physical contact. And believe it or not, you can be sued for both an assault and battery. If I say, hey, I'm going to clean your clock, and then I hit you, they have a legal cause of action against me for both assault, the fear, and the actual touching, the battery. So they can sue me for both of those separately. And let's say I'm getting involved out there, I see someone I think is up to no good criminal activity, and I grab them, and they start to struggle, and I hit them. So I placed them in fear, and I've actually assaulted them, and I've also touched them, I've done the battery, and now I chase them, they take off running, and they jump into some backyard. Now I've trespassed as well, I finally grab them, and I take them down to the ground, and I find out it's the wrong guy. So now I've probably committed three crimes, and I can be sued at least four times. Once for assault, once for battery, once for trespassing, and once for unlawful imprisonment. So when we see these lawsuits against our police officers, and the same thing you'll face as a citizen out on the street, there'll be separate causes of action for each one of these. One, two, three, and four different causes of action. The trespassing, again, is the same thing. If you are in a location, real property, where you have reason to know you shouldn't be, either you've been told not to be there, there's a sign, or a reasonable citizen would know that people aren't allowed to be there, such as the fenced yards and that type of thing. There doesn't necessarily have to be a sign up saying no trespassing. Citizens know fenced backyards are private property and you're not allowed to be there routinely. So trespassing is pretty much the same elements as far as the criminal side. For the civil, as far as unlawful imprisonment, again, that's holding a person against their will and movement however slight. Very, very much the same thing as kidnapping on the criminal side. Defamation. Defamation is definitely an issue that you may face as far as participating in this program. And the idea where that comes up, there's two types that we normally deal with, libel and slander. I'm sure everyone's heard the terms, but you may not be familiar with exactly what they deal with. Libel is usually something that's written. It's a false statement that damages someone's reputation, and libel is written. Slander, in general, is spoken. It's something that doesn't last as long. It's something I say and it's not recorded permanently. That's slander. If it's recorded permanently, like through a videotape or written down, that's a form of libel. And the reason I say you face either libel or slander, which are the two types of defamation we're concerned with, liability participating in this program. Let's say you've been out on patrol for a few months and some of the citizens or neighbors ask you, who's the problem in my neighborhood? Who's the kids who are doing the burglaries? Who's the kids we need to watch? And you say, little Johnny, 16-year-old, is the scumbag burglar. If we cannot prove that is absolutely true, that little Johnny is a burglar, his parents have a civil cause of action against you for defamation. They can sue you for saying that if you can't prove it's absolutely true. My suggestion to you, never accuse a person of a crime. Even if you know they were convicted of that crime in the past, I still want to do it. There's no problem with you saying, well, I might keep an eye on Johnny. That's an opinion. There's no problem with you saying, I think the three kids who live in this house might be involved in some of the things that concern us. Again, an opinion, no problem. But when you start connecting specific people to specific crimes or incidents, if it's not 100% true, you face a lawsuit, and if it's a juvenile by their parents or guardian, a lawsuit for defamation where they can collect damages against you. One of the other things I should point out, if you notice again the intentional versus the negligent. Intentional here, and I know any of our police officers, if they're the ones teaching this to you, they can tell you about the intentional mental state that goes along with criminal activity. We call it a culpable mental state. The problem is the culpable mental state on the criminal side is not the same as on the civil side. On the criminal side, we have a culpable mental state known as intentional also. And the best example I can give you, let's say I'm working walking a beat again, and I'm walking down the alley late at night and someone takes a shot at me. And I want to have them prosecuted for attempt murder. Think about it for a minute. Someone shoots at me, I'm a police officer in uniform walking down the alley at 3 o'clock in the morning. Do you think it would be reasonable, or do you think I could get them prosecuted for attempt murder or attempt homicide? Do you think? You think that's possible? Well, probably not. Probably not. And why do I say that? On the criminal side, I've got to show his intent to kill me. That's what's required for an attempt homicide. That he knew I was there, that he was aiming at me, and he wanted to take my life. That's what's required for intent on the criminal side. On the civil side, that's not true. Let's say now I'm just a citizen walking down the alley at 3 o'clock in the morning and someone fires around in my direction and hits me. I don't have to prove they knew I was there and they intended to shoot me and they intended to kill me or anything like that. The intent on the civil side is more like what we call knowingly on the criminal side. Intent on the civil side is intent to do the action. So if the person takes their gun and points it down the alley and pulls the trigger, they intended to fire a bullet down that alley. And the general consequences that that can cause are presumed to be hitting someone and putting them in the hospital, possibly killing them. So intent on the civil side is just, I intended to pull the trigger and shoot a projectile in that direction. Whereas intent on the criminal side, I'd have to actually prove in their mind they intended to hit me with that projectile and take my life with it. So hopefully you can see the difference here. And the reason I stress that as much as I do, the difference between the intentional torts and the negligence that we'll get to in just a minute has to do with damages that can be awarded against you. Everyone, I'm sure, in this room and everyone watching this has heard the term punitive damages. You see the GM cases. About a year ago, there was a case against GM, a civil lawsuit, where they had the side impact gas tanks that blew up when there was a crash from the sides of the vehicles, and the jury awarded $104 million against GM. Early part of June 1996, we had a lawsuit with a jury award against GM of $140 million. Punitives are a big part of those awards. The one for $104 million on the side impact of the trucks, I can tell you exactly what it was. The compensatory damages, which are actual pain and suffering, time lost from work, medical bills, those types of things, were $4 million out of the $104 million. The $100 million was punitive damages. And punitives are to punish the person for doing something wrong. The punitives in the GM case were, you knew these gas tanks would blow up if there was a side impact, and you still made the trucks that way. Therefore, you acted in bad faith, we're going to punish you. You know, $4 million to actually compensate the victims and $100 million to punish GM for doing that. Punitive damages are only available with intentional torts. Once we talk about negligence, punitives are not available. Because negligence, generally what that means, it was an accident. There was no bad faith or no intent to do the act. Negligence is purely an accident, so no punitive damages are available. So understand, if you're out there participating and you put yourself in jeopardy of one of these types of intentional torts, civil liability, you face the potential of punitive damages against you. And usually punitive damages are quite a bit more than the actual compensatory damages to pay for their pain, suffering, to make them whole again. Their lost wages, all those types of things, medical bills. Let's talk about negligence. Let me define that for you very generally. Negligence is a careless act or failure to act which falls below the standards for reasonable action required by society or the law. How do we say that in general English? Negligence is not doing something that society expects you to do, or doing something that society expects you not to do. That generally is negligence. And again, when you have an accident in your motor vehicle, society expects you to drive safely, to stop for stop signs, those types of things. When you don't and you have an accident with another vehicle, you are negligent. And I have 4 points of negligence, and these are the 4 areas that in order for someone to sue you successfully, they must prove all 4 of these elements of a negligence cause of action. And before I get into those, let me talk about what I just mentioned, try to stress a little bit, suing you successfully. You can be sued for anything. As a police officer, as a citizen participating in this program, you can be sued for anything. If someone doesn't like the way you look, the way you speak, the color of your house, they can sue you. As a police officer, I've been sued twice. It's never gone to trial. It's been dismissed well before trial on what's called summary judgment. I was sued and the claims were so ridiculous that we filed an answer, the police department, and said there's no basis to this lawsuit at all. And the judge looked at it and agreed and throws the lawsuit out. That's called summary judgment. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. You can be sued for anything. Everyone's heard about the problems with the prisoner lawsuits and prisoner litigation recently. Well, some of the best ones I can tell you about, some prisoners in Florence, our maximum security prison down in Florence, Arizona, sued the state of Arizona under an 8th Amendment to the Constitution, 8th Amendment claim of cruel and unusual punishment. And what they said is it was cruel and unusual punishment because there was no pepperoni on their pizzas. Yeah, believe it or not, no pepperoni on the pizza is an 8th Amendment cruel and unusual constitutional claim. And yeah, they brought this lawsuit. And, you know, the attorneys for the attorney general who handles these prisoner lawsuits couldn't just throw out the lawsuit and say this is ridiculous. They have to file an answer, and they spend lots of state taxpayers' money to respond to, you know, why they shouldn't be allowed to be sued for not having pepperoni on their pizzas. So again, you can be sued for anything. The best one, and I'll just tell you one more, it's the best one I've ever heard. It was a person in Virginia, and he sued himself. He sued himself for violating his constitutional right. He went to a bar one night, and he got drunk. And while he's drunk, he gets in a fight, and he got his butt kicked. So he sues himself for violating his own constitutional rights by getting intoxicated enough to get in a fight and get beat up. And then he also claims that he's indigent. He has no money. So he asks the state to pay the $5 million worth of damages he claimed against himself. People can sue for anything. That's the point I'm trying to get across to you. It's incredible what we see lawsuits against the police officers here in Phoenix for. We get sued all the time. And almost very, very few of them have any real merit to them. So understand, you can be sued at any time, but these are the things you need to be concerned with if someone's going to succeed you successfully. On the negligence side, they must prove these 4 elements before they can sue you successfully. Duty, that you had a duty to act or not to act. Breach, that you breached the duty that you had. 3 is causation, that by breaching this duty, you caused, 4, the damages. So you can only be sued successfully in negligence if you had a duty to act or not to act, you breached that duty, and in doing so, you caused someone damages. Let me give you a perfect example of this that relates to what you're doing. You're driving down the street, and again, you're watching little 16-year-old Johnny. You see him kind of up close to the houses, you know, looking in some windows, staying close to the bushes, and you think he's up to no good, so you're keeping an eye on him. And as you're driving down the street, you're approaching a stop sign. When you're approaching a stop sign, what do you think your duty is? To stop. Okay, your duty is to stop when you approach the stop sign. But you're watching Johnny and you don't even see the stop sign. You don't know there's one there. You drive right through the intersection with no idea there's a stop sign there. So what have you done? You've now breached the duty to stop. At that point, you cannot be sued successfully for negligence because the last 2 elements are missing. If in doing that you didn't cause damages to anyone, you have not put yourself in a position where you can be sued successfully for negligence. Obviously, a police officer can pull you over and write a civil traffic citation for a failure to stop for the stop sign. Different issue. But as far as negligence, no, not yet. But let me follow up on that example. You're driving down the street, you see Johnny, you think he's maybe looking at doing a burglary or something along that line. You don't see the stop sign and you drive through. As you're going through the intersection, here comes little 10-year-old Billy on his bicycle, and he sees you go through the stop sign, so he lays his bike down. Before he even gets to your car, no contact, he just lays his bike down and he scrapes up his knees and he bends up his frame a little bit. But there's no contact with your car. Do you think that Billy's parents can sue you successfully under negligence theory for the damage damage to his bicycle and the scrapes, bumps, and bruises and injuries he has. Absolutely. Why? You had a duty to stop and you breached it. Did you cause little Billy's damages by running that stop sign? Absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to get across to you. It doesn't require, causation does not require physical contact. Your car hits his bike or something like that. Your action caused those damages and therefore you're liable under negligence for them. Another one, let me give you one more real quick example so we understand. And this one doesn't tie in so much. City of Phoenix has a regulation requiring fences around poles. I think everyone knows that. If you have a pole, you have to have a fence. That regulation creates a duty that you do so reasonably. You have a fence. And in City of Phoenix, our code requires a certain height. But let's say it didn't. Let's say the Phoenix City Ordinance just said you have to have a fence around your pole, and you decided to save a little money, so you put up an 8-inch high fence. You complied with the ordinance that says you must have a fence. You just put one up that's only 8 inches high. At that point, your neighbor, you know, gets into your backyard, and he's a year and a half old or something, barely walking, but he can crawl pretty good, and he climbs over that fence, gets into your pool, and drowns. He drowns and dies. Have you been negligent? Could you claim because you complied with the statute and put up a fence that you cannot be sued for negligence? No, you can't. Okay, and the reason is this requires reasonableness. The way you avoid a negligence lawsuit is to be reasonable. That's really the idea here. That duty that was created on you was to protect young people from drowning, kids from drowning. So putting up an 8-inch high fence would not be reasonable. Even though you met the terms of the statute, the courts would say you did not meet your duty to protect kids in your neighborhood. They would still find you responsible for the death of that child as far as a civil action and negligence. Hopefully that covers it well enough. And again, understand with the intentional torts, punitive damages are available. In negligence, no punitive damages because it was an accident. There was no bad will or no intent. Like I said, pulling the trigger and intending to shoot the bullet. Here there's no intent. You just had an accident, so no punitives are available against you. While I'm talking about damages, let me mention the Arizona Homestead Act. One of the questions I usually get when I'm doing these is, can someone take my house? And the answer in general is yes. There is some protection against that, however, and it's called the Arizona Homestead Act. Fortunately, about 2 years ago, our legislature made some changes in it, as well as increasing the amount that is protected in your house. They also made it so you no longer have to go down to your county recorder and file a homestead exemption, okay? Today, it's automatic. Every citizen in the state has this protection for their house. And the protection covers the first $100,000 of equity in your home. So if you have a $300,000 house and you paid off $150,000, you have $150,000 in equity, what you paid off. The Arizona Homestead Act will protect the first $100,000. But the problem is you have an additional $50,000 in equity on that house. So the state, and usually through the county sheriff, can take your house and sell it at a foreclosure sale. And they'll give you, if they get the $150,000 value, they'll give you $100,000 of that, and the additional $50,000 will go to the victim. So yes, even though we have this $100,000 protection, if you've got more equity than that, they can take your home and sell it. Now, if you have less equity, that usually won't happen. But the problem is, that applies only on the state causes of action. As far as the negligence, that should protect you if you have less than $100,000 in equity. On the intentional torts, that will usually protect you also because they're usually a state cause rather than a federal cause of action, which is something separate. But the problem is, when punitives come into it, if you are really grossly negligent or go extremely reckless with what you do, you intend, let's say, to shoot 20 bullets now down that alley at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you hit maybe two or three people, the state will still find a way to take your house and take that $100,000. They will get around this exemption. So understand, even though it's in the law, if they feel that you were really acting in malice and in bad faith, they will still find a way to get around that if you do one of these intentional torts and take your property away from you. Obviously, that only protects your home, your bank account, your cars, those types of things can be seized and sold to get to your assets if you're sued and the person gets an award against you. That's why I want to try to let you know this is serious business we're talking about. That's why the rules that we have that they'll explain to you are set up to protect you so you don't get involved in these situations. One other thing I need to mention, and this is probably the most important thing, hopefully they will mention to you again. The most important thing for you to understand is the City of Phoenix carries no insurance on your behalf. You are not acting as an agent of the Phoenix Police Department or the City of Phoenix. We do not insure you for your acts or for workers' compensation. Let's say if you get hurt, there is no coverage whatsoever. That's probably the most critical thing for you to understand. Let me move now into some of the activities that may lead to liability exposure on your part. And I made a list of a few of the most frequent ones. Driving. Driving is definitely the place where you will face the most liability in your action. And some of the inappropriate actions there are speeding, chasing a vehicle. Obviously, you have no right ride like a police officer does to run through a red light or a stop sign or to exceed the speed limit. And understand, a police officer can only do those when he's got his lights and sirens on. There are very strict requirements on us, and even then, we're only protected if something happens if we were reasonable in doing so. You have none of those protections. So be careful of speeding or chasing vehicles, those types of things. Don't get involved. Be our eyes and ears, and just let us know what's going on. Another one, not watching the road, those types of things. Like I say, if you're driving alone, and we have a rule in here that suggests very strongly that you have two people in the car, let the driver drive and the passenger watch the people who you think are up to no good. I can tell you, in the city of Phoenix, for the police department, the number one liability we face and biggest reason we get sued is our driving. Our officers are, you know, working on their computers or watching what's going on in the Circle K's and the gas stations. They're doing a million other things other than keeping their eyes on the road. We get in accidents, and that's the number one place we face liability. It's definitely the number one you will also participating in this program. So my suggestion to you very strongly, two people in the car and let the driver do the job of driving and keeping his eyes on the road. Some of the other inappropriate actions, and these are more, it's inappropriate for you to even participate in the program. Let's say you've been working a lot of night shifts or a lot of overtime and you come home and you're dead tired. Not a good time to go out with your citizens on patrol. If you're on medication, especially medication that makes you drowsy, let your partners know it's not appropriate for you to participate in the program. That can cloud your judgment. You might decide, hey, I'm going to jump into the middle of this, even though they told me not to. Medications and being overly fatigued. If you're too stressed or emotionally upset, you had a fight with your significant other, or don't get involved in this. It's just like our police officers. We don't want them being on the street enforcing laws when they're, you know, in a real bad mood or something like that. It can create problems for them. Don't you do it either. It's a situation that can get you into trouble that otherwise you never would have gotten into. Some of the other actions, obviously confronting people. Absolutely don't do it. It's not worth it. I've talked about all the liability reasons. You could go to jail if you do it and you're wrong. You could definitely get sued even if you're right. Even if you're right that this, you know, kid is involved in criminal activity, if you confront them and you end up breaking his arm or, you know, causing some damages, you can be successfully sued even if you were trying to stop a criminal activity. But the number one reason we tell you not to get involved is for your own safety. I can tell you, when I was an officer working out in Maryville, I dealt with a lot of kids painting graffiti. And I can guarantee you, I never had a situation when I had more than one kid doing graffiti where one of them was an arm. It was the most amazing thing I ever saw. 12-year-old kids, 14-year-old kids. I remember one, four young kids. Three of the four had firearms on them. You think it's just a, you know, some young kids painting graffiti, no big deal, I'm going to get out and tell them to stop. Well, you get in a situation where, you know, one or maybe three of the four kids have a weapon on them and decide to start shooting at you. It's not worth your life putting yourself in jeopardy to stop someone from painting on a wall. So it's not only a liability we're concerned about on your behalf, it's your own safety. Keep that in mind. Some of the other areas as far as how to avoid, well, we've talked about pretty much how to avoid the liability in the major areas. One other thing let me mention for you, I told you already, we do not provide any insurance to benefit you or to protect you, either workers' compensation or insurance. I'm not an expert on insurance, and I know none of the officers on Phoenix PD are insurance experts, but let me at least make a couple recommendations to you. I would talk to your insurance agent about your coverage for both your auto and your homeowner's policies. Understand, with the intentional torts, most policies have a clause in there. They will not protect you or pay any damages on your behalf if it was an intentional act. So you need to be very careful. Just like the punitives can be against you personally, your insurance policies usually have a clause in there that they will not pay damages in intentional tort causes of action. As far as the negligence, you have an auto accident, usually they will. But what I'd look at, in Arizona, unless they've changed the law, and I don't believe they have, our minimum required coverage is $15,000, $30,000. And what that means is $15,000 per person, $30,000 per incident. So if you're out driving and you run into another car, and let's say it's a nice new Mercedes, and there's four people involved, and all four are injured, the most you can pay to anyone is $15,000, including their pain and suffering and the damage to his nice new Mercedes. And the maximum, if all four are injured, is $30,000. That coverage, is, I think everyone will recognize very clearly, is not enough to protect. I personally carry at least $100,000, $300,000 in insurance coverage. Understand, even if it's negligence and your insurance protection, you've got this $15,000, $30,000 protection. If it goes over that, that's again where they can start looking at seizing your bank accounts, taking your car, your house if you have some excessive equity in it, or obviously if it wasn't intentional, those types of things. So talk to your insurance agents, both your homeowners and your vehicle insurance, and look at whether or not you have enough coverage to protect you. And I'm not saying that you'll ever need to use it, but it's something you should at least think about and talk to your insurance agent about before you get into that situation. Understand, just like I talk about liability for you, there are rules about me providing legal advice to non-employees of the Phoenix Police Department, so I'm limited in what I can say to you. I'll address it and any issues that they raise to me, and they can address them for you. One other question.
Little Johnny suing us. What if little Johnny is the one doing it, is that something that there could be civil recourse for?
Absolutely. And again, as an attorney for the Phoenix Police Department, I could not represent you in that cause of action or civil lawsuit. But if little Johnny does something to you, damages your rose bushes when he's in front, yeah, that can be negligence. You know, he had a duty not to be there. He breached it. He caused damages. Or if he throws a rock through your window of your house or your car, those types of things, if he causes personal injury to you, clearly. The thing you need to understand, if it's little Johnny, you're going to end up suing their parents. And if the parents don't have the money to pay, and in Arizona, parents are financially responsible. I believe the limit today is up to $10,000. It used to be $2,500, but I believe it's now been raised to $10,000. Parents are responsible for the actions of their minor children. If it's someone over the age of majority, age 18, they're not responsible anymore, unless in some way they cause them to do the act. Yes, you would have a cause of action against them, and the same rules apply, criminal and civil, all those types of things, but you'd have to contact your own attorney. Good question. Yeah, it's something you might want to think about. Our officers, you know, if they're wrong, they have the same right to sue people, and they do so from time to time. Okay, thank you.